We'll kick off the March 7, 2008 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham and 9SSN. Have you ever been asked to talk to a local service club or non-ham radio organization about ham radio, but didn't know where to obtain a good PowerPoint presentation with which to give it? You now can obtain one free from Terry Fletcher, WA0ITP. Terry has been a longtime resident of Ottumwa, Iowa. He was first licensed in 1964 as WN0ITP, securing his advanced class license in 1976. Terry is retired from a quality control reliability career with John Deere. So how can you get your Cornhusker hands on his program? We'll tell you after he tells us how the idea for it evolved and, in part, what his program covers.
In 2005, had a friend in our coffee group that wanted to know if I put on a little program for the local Kiwanis program. I wonder what I'd say. You almost never run out of things to say about ham radio. It's such a diverse topic. But these were guys that were in the audience that didn't know much about it. I'd heard of it, of course, and I knew quite a few of them. They knew I was a ham, and they'd heard about ham radio, but they didn't really know what it was. I began to look for a little program of some type that was already canned and done and ready to go so it wouldn't be much work and steal it. Unfortunately, I couldn't find one. Talked to some of the guys at the ARRL. They didn't have one either. There just wasn't one around that was designed to provide some information for folks that have heard about ham radio but don't really know much about it, even sometimes confuse it with CB. You got to get that separation. That's the background of how this thing came about. It's a multimedia presentation. We've got some sound. I've got a little CW in there to tell them a little bit about what that is. Some history. I've given it quite a few times now. I'd have found that the hams seem to like it better than the Kiwanis guys. We're used to it. We like it. So, and they're on a noon hour, and they're really hurrying, you know. Radio pioneers. We talk about some of the famous names, of course. Thomas Edison. Guys that we know about. Heinrich Hertz. Marconi's a common name. Armstrong. DeForest. Brown. These are some of the guys that we talk about. And I always list what they do beside here, what they've done, what their contributions have been. Still hurts to use Hertz. I grew up on cycles, so I always lapse into cycles. But Heinrich Hertz proved that electrical waves traveled at the speed of light. That was a big thing. Led the way for the physics behind the wavelength, the relationship between wavelength and speed. Marconi, of course, big contribution was telegraphy by radio, not by magnetism. The presentation isn't designed to take away something to do. It's just informational only. Okay, we talk a little bit about Titanic and Marconi. This guy is popular right now, and when presentation was started, of course, the movie was out. Marconi trained the radioman on there. In fact, the radioman went down with it, was a Marconi trained operator. This is a reproduction of the spark gap signal, an imitation of a spark gap, a reproduction sound. So you can imagine if you were on a rescue ship 50, 60 miles away and you heard this, it'd be kind of startling. Just about the time they began to use SOS. Also, CQD was used prior to that time. Calling all stations danger, or come quick danger, or about any other acronym you want to make out of that. MGY was a call sign of the ship. I also recorded one myself, same speed with modern sound, but we don't need that for this group. Early amateur radio before 1912, call signs were made up just by anybody that you could just use your own initials or whatever you like. They did that, pretty common. The Radio Act of 1912 changed all that, and that's when the first licenses were issued. And in 1914, the ARRL came into existence. And I talked a little bit about it being a national organization, where the word relay came from. DX in those days was 25 miles or so. To get a note across the country or relay a message across the country took lots of relay stations. So the American Radio Relay League was named for that activity. There are about 600,000 today. That's the last number I looked at about this time. When I was making up the slide, around 660,000, probably a few more than that now. It was up to 680,000 at one time. In 1921, here was a milestone. First transatlantic message by amateurs was produced. And in those days, amateurs were using spark gap transmitters and coherer receivers and detectors, which was not an invention by Marconi. But Marconi really didn't invent much, but he was driven by the idea of providing communications for ships at sea. Primarily, that was his motivation, and he wanted to provide security and safety by means of communication, and the only thing he had available to him at the time was, of course, spark gap. His transmitters were things to behold. There's many books out on him. One of the most interesting ones is written, I think, by a Welshman, and he describes in England along the channel towers that were 400, 500, 600 feet tall and gigantic capacitors that were charged up. And when the operators threw the switch, you'd hear it for 2 or 3 miles. You'd hear the sound, not the signal, but the sound of the gap being jumped. It's a bolt of lightning. So very interesting stuff if he fills the bill as far as being interesting. Famous hands, we've talked about some of those. King Hussein of Jordan, lots of people know about him. Some of these names are a little older. Tony England was the first astronaut. He made the first space shuttle contact, and we have that contact between he and the ground station. Curtis LeMay, Barry Goldwater, everybody knows Barry Goldwater's name. Walter Cronkite, Arthur Godfrey. I get down to the bottom. Not a lot of the guys in the audience know who this guy is. We do, because he's been on the cover of magazines. Joe Walsh is one of the lead guys in the rock group, the Eagles. So I tell him, you may not know who this guy is, but your kids do. And they do. You can hit the internet, just Google famous hams, and there must be 300 of them. This is a ham-to-ham QSO, W4ASX talking to K7GSE. It just happens to be that was on 14250. This is played for a non-ham. It's never heard of contact.
Up here, Sam, you can hear this. But in any event, I appreciate your having come back. And I'll turn it to you, Frank, for your final. And, yeah, everything you have is doing just a great job out here. Good for you. K7GSE, this is W4ASX, Miami.
Real fine there, Bob. Well, just about time here because I got a net here up on 2 meters. I check in just about every Tuesday night. We have the local Snohomish County Reese's net here up on one of the local repeaters here at 8 o'clock. So these give me enough chance to take a breather and get ready to put the net here this evening. But my pleasure talking to you there, Bob. By golly, hopefully we could do it again. Got a great signal there. Hopefully we have a chance to chat with you again.
It helps to provide a real live on-the-air contact to guys that have never heard a real live on-the-air contact. One thing I ran across was, and I know you guys know this too, that nearly all the astronauts, Russian or American, are hams. For a couple of good reasons, you know, it's good backup communications, I'm sure. But boy, the PR is terrific. These guys talking from the International Space Station to classrooms, you know, that's wonderful press. You can't get better advertisement for both the hobby and the space program. And maybe it even develops some inquisitive little minds someday.
You're listening to a 2007 Dayton Hamvention presentation by Terry Fletcher, WA0ITP of Ottumwa, Iowa. We'll tell you where you can find his free program and conclude our excerpt from his talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report, being subsidized this month by the Egyptian Radio Club of Metro St. Louis. This spring, they will hold Bubba's VHF Ugly and Tenor Contest and Potluck Lunch on Sunday, May 4th. The best working, downright ugly antenna wins. See www.w9aiu.org for details. We'll be right back.
Here's Greg Howick, AA30, talking to Tony England. I mentioned Tony before. It's really neat when hams have lots of qualifications to kind of parade those qualifications. So while they're listening, I ask them to just take a browse down through there and see what these hams are. Kind of get a little play off of Tony's qualifications. He's quite a man.
W0ORE on shuttle.
W0ORE is AA30, Alpha Alpha 3, Oscar.
Alpha Alpha 3, Oscar, we copy. This is W0ORE on board Challenger. You're bye-bye, and welcome aboard.
Okay, very good. Thank you much, Tony. And we're receiving you 5-9 down here in Maryland. Good luck. Thanks for the contact.
You bet. We're enjoying ourselves immensely, and the chance to share it with all you folks is just an added pleasure. W0ORE on board Challenger.
That was in 1988, and that was the first space shuttle contact. So I'll get into a little bit about what radio is. Generally, we go along a little faster than this at the meetings because I'm pressed for time, and kind of zip through the stuff. Electromagnetic magnetic spectrum here is just only to show that everything is related. You know, we like to use the term DC to daylight. You've probably heard that term, and it kind of is true. We have audio at the bottom, X-rays and gamma rays at the top, and somewhere along in there is a little portion of the spectrum that we can see, and down a little farther is our two portions, radio spectrum and audio. Just the concept that the electromagnetic spectrum is a fact of physics and a fact of life, and there's lots of things in there that we can relate to that we never think about. You don't really think about light as being part of it, but it's true. Or X-rays. Or audio. We have some operating requirements to let the audience know that we just don't operate willy-nilly. Talk a little bit about some of the frequency allocations. This one down at the bottom, I like to operate QRP, and I always grin just a little bit to myself when I say that bottom line there that we're supposed to be using minimum transmitter power. And a lot of times, that's just a few watts. But most of the time, I don't pay a lot of attention to that. And neither do a lot of people. We just fire up the rig and go. If 100 watts across town, that's great. When one or two could do it, it's better to use the one or two. Plus, it's kind of an adverse pleasure for me to make a contact with as small amount of power as I can for the fun of doing that. Modern equipment. Talk about some modern equipment. We have inexpensive, very capable transceivers. And I mention that because one of the first things you hear from the audience is, this is an expensive hobby, isn't it? Well, yes and no, it can be, but it doesn't have to be. Price range is really broad. You can put something together that's really cheap, or you can go spend a lot of money. And we have different ways of sending signals, different types of understanding, AM, FM, sideband, Morse code, teletype, and even TV. This is the top-end one, and it does about everything, and put that in there to show them that, this stuff can be really sophisticated. You guys really have to know a lot to be a ham, don't you? Kind of impress them. Basic transceivers, this is one that looks complex, but it's really cheap, and if you like Morse code and you like to build and you want an entry-level rig, this is probably one of the very best. Any of the SW Plus series are terrific. Or you can make your own. This is a schematic of a little transmitter I threw together for a club project. Really, 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 really simple. Has to be or be beyond me. The idea here is that you can do your own. Once you get a ham ticket, you've learned enough to do some of this stuff without having to go out and pay 40 prices for it. You can just build it. Make up your design, solder it together. Really cheap stuff, a lot of fun to play with. Stick it in an Altoids. The whole thing is really cheap. It's about $10, including the mints. These are all kits that were available and put into Altoids tins and also Whitman sampler tin there. Most of this is just show and tell as you go through it. And we talk a little bit about making signals. Basically, two methods, even though a lot of folks are using computer-generated digital signals, but it's basically CW and phone. How do the signals get to where they're going? And this brings up a little bit about propagation and the ionosphere. What happens to a signal that starts over here? It can go up and hit the ionosphere and bounce back down. And we talk a little bit then about sunspots or lack of them nowadays. This is an interest to them because usually somebody in the audience says almost automatically when they see this fact that there's some skip here and skip zones, they almost always talk about, you remember before we had cable and we had TV antennas, I remember seeing Boston coming in Iowa. That leads to a little discussion about propagation. And this one usually generates some interest. Emergency operations, cover that quite a little bit. And usually there's some folks who have just recently had some information about that or had relatives involved in some sort of a problem like tornadoes in Kansas or Katrina in Louisiana. This particular slide and the following one deal with the tsunami disaster, which is very prevalent even today. A lot of people remember that a lot. And the idea behind disasters is our approach to disaster participation is portable operations. Often batteries and wire antennas do the trick. A lot of times you'll have situations that are published about amateurs providing communications when everything else fails and you see a license plate to that effect. But I like to talk a little bit about 9/11 in New York City. When the towers went down, so did the communication. Most all of the public service communications had antennas on those towers because they're the highest place in the city. For some time, there were only amateur communications in and out. Fires in the Southwest in 2004 was exactly the same thing. Some of the local groups out there went out and actually installed 2-meter repeaters out in the mountains. Forest Service didn't have communication way back in those areas and couldn't get it quickly. So this was a really neat thing, and a lot of folks remember that. I like to say that the value of a ham that can throw a wire over a tree or a building and sit down with a battery and a small rig and provide emergency traffic in and out of those areas, that guy is invaluable. That service is invaluable.
And that concludes our excerpt from a 2007 Dayton Hamvention talk by Ottumwa, Iowa resident Terry Fletcher, WA0ITP. You can download Terry's ham radio from the general public PowerPoint presentation at the tiny URL address, which is http://tinyurl.com/2r9hn9. Trust me, that's a legit address. Again, that's http://tinyurl.com/2r9hn9. We'll post this address on the site's mention page on therainreport.com. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2008 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder, producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.